Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Chris Nicastro, the outgoing Commissioner of Education, has announced her retirement. What kind of a grade does she give herself? We'll find out a little bit later. But first, we're talking about a special program for burn victims, especially children. Their injuries are more than skin deep. Victims of severe burns often find themselves with disfiguring injuries that can cause more than physical pain. There are psychological scars, too, and both can be especially traumatic for young people. The Burns Recovered Support Group To the Rescue. It was formed in 1983 by a group of burn survivors and others to assist burn survivors in their recovery. A crown jewel in the program is its Missouri Children's Burn Camp. Here to talk about the camp and the Missouri Burns Recovered Support Group are Linda Hansen, executive director, that is, of the group. Gary Hansen is a burn survivor and president of the group's board. So nice to see you both again.
We are so glad to be here with you.
This is not our first interview, is it?
No, it's not.
We go back together a long time. It's been so nice to know you. And congratulations on the work you guys have been doing. It's just very inspiring.
Thank you, Don.
Linda, let me start with you. What happened in 1983 to get this whole thing going?
Well, we weren't really there, so I don't fully know, but there it became clear that there was a need for a support group, peer support driven, not driven by professional medical people, but for people to be able to say, I've been through what you've been through, you're going to get better if you're the burn survivor, and if you're the co-patient, which would be the wife, the parent, the relative, or the co-survivor, to be able to say, these are some suggestions to help you on this journey of caring for your loved one. It's overwhelming.
And you would know as well as anyone and better than most because you've been through that.
Yes, yes. And I know that when Gary had his accident, which was in 1991, so it's 23 years ago, he didn't know he was hurt because he was kept in a semi-comatose condition with drugs and on a respirator. And he went for 30 days not knowing he had been injured. But those 30 days for me were an open wound because I knew every minute what was going on and was terrified and panicked and didn't know what I should be doing, what I could be doing. And now when I do peer support and I'm talking to a loved one at that early stage, at the acute stage, I always look at them and I go, right now, you are in more pain than your loved one because they have good drugs and you don't.
Gary, let's turn to your story. I've heard it before, but most people listening have not. It's an interesting story with many facets.
Well, in May 9th of 1991, I was acting like a juvenile delinquent and driving a car in a way that I was acting like I was 22 instead of 42. And I caused a situation where I got the thing to blow up on me. And I was burn injured, and that's the one thing most people don't understand. Burns happen so quickly. Somebody says, well, why didn't you just get away from it? Well, in a millisecond, I was unable to react. I was already burned and disabled, and the next thing you know, the firefighters were pulling me out of the car after their response time of somewhere 6, 7, 8 minutes. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of burn injuries in that, a lot of inhalation damage. And like Linda said, for the first month or so, I barely knew where I was and what was going on. As I was getting better, that goes, what was the support group about? I was going, there's medical people telling me, oh, it looks great, when they were opening up the bandages. And I'm laughing, going, this looks great. Come on, you're taking more drugs than you're giving me because it does not look great. I didn't need to go to medical school to see that. Well, what they were talking about was the vision of what it's going to be like later on. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm very fortunate. I walk the streets today and people really don't notice the burns too much and the skin grafts and the facial burns. But there was a long time that I struggled. I was dealing with trying to get back into society, trying to get back to working. And I so desperately wanted to have people around to talk to and see what it'll look great in the future really look like.
What were the extent of your injuries?
I have burns, skin grafts, third and fourth degree burns up and down from the top of my feet to the top of my forehead. I am not a big burn. I'm only skin grafted over about 20% of my body. But I took some of the burn in some of the worst places, hands, face, knees, groin. And that, you know, the recovery takes longer over some joints than somebody that has a body burn of 30, 40, 50%. But any burn can be debilitating. And I can assure everybody in the audience, you will make choices in your life, and you will, hopefully, you'll make choices to keep from any kind of burn, because I think everybody's experienced a small burn, and you can imagine multiplying that over a large percentage of your body.
You said when you first saw the extent of your injuries that you had certain feelings. What do you mean? You think I look great? But what did you really feel about what you looked like and what lay ahead?
Well, I didn't know early on. For the longest time, when I finally did come around, they wouldn't let me see myself. I knew I was all wrapped up over my face. And I kept requesting, well, what does it look like? Don't you have a mirror? And they kept coming up with different excuses. So I'm pretty enterprising. And by that time, I was starting to be able to feed myself. So one lunch, I got the spoon off the soup and polished it up, and I was pulling up dressings off my face and using the spoon like a mirror to see what was underneath there. And I was very curious, but then all of a sudden the light bulb went off that I don't know how this is going to relate to walking the street, because what I was looking at was not something that you would normally see walking down the street. But the medical staff was saying, oh, well, you're going to be going home in a week or two. And it didn't connect. I needed people to help me connect the dots on where the future was.
Linda, what were you thinking? Did you want to add to that? Go ahead.
Well, when they sent him home from the hospital, he was wrapped up like the mummy. He was fully enclosed in dressings, and all he had were slits for his eyes, a slit for the nose, and a slit for his mouth. And yes, people gawked. People stared. And I think that I was more sensitive to it at times than Gary was. Then as he started to heal and they took the dressings off, Gary's nose today is man-made and not God-made because he lost his nose in the accident. So in the early days, and he didn't have a hole. There was skin covering it, but you certainly, anybody who looked at him, they didn't do double takes, they did triple takes. And as his wife, that was very painful, but Gary had a great sense of who he was and his inner sense and self-worth. And one day he looked at me and he said, you know, if people have to stare, it's their problem, not mine. I'm still who I was, who I am. And that helped me get through it. But the first 4 years, and we always went out in public, whether it was to the movies or shopping or to dinner, but people always stared. And we probably went through that for about a four-year period of time. And what we really learned, well, we learned many things, but one of the key things is that he is a burn survivor. Mm-hmm. You're a victim if you choose to be. It's attitude. And people will treat you like a victim if you act like a victim.
This was in 1991, and that was some 8 years after the Burns group, the support group was formed. Did you know about it at the time? Did you have any support assistance for what you were going through?
I'm a crybaby under the best of circumstances. People who know me know that I cry watching TV commercials. So in his acute stage, I was crying, as I tell people, 30 hours a day. And the nursing staff always would tell me, call the support group, and they gave me a phone number. I called it somewhere from 10 to 12 times. In retrospect, I left pathetic messages. No one ever returned a call, ever. And I always thought, you're supposed to be a support group? What are you doing? Gary and I went to one meeting. They didn't even welcome him. They didn't even say hello. They didn't ask him anything. And we never went back. And in 1994, tragically, one of the co-founders who was then running the group died. We heard about it, so we started putting our nose into the group. And so that we started going in 1994, and we were both put on the board within the first 3 months. They just weren't functioning.
They were kind of burned out, I think. It was a group of gentlemen.
No pun intended, no, I'm sure, no. Gary.
But they were a group of gentlemen, and back in those days, very few women got burned, injured, because of they have better genes than we do. They think a little bit more. And they didn't, back in those days, work in more dangerous occupations. It all adds up to a different demographic of burn injuries. And they were a good old boys club a bit, and that's why I think we didn't get welcomed in a bit. And they became dysfunctional over time, and that's why we saw that there was a great opportunity to bring out the burn group. It's the Phoenix Rising story of burns, as the group needed new life, new blood, and a new direction.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Linda.
Well, then Gary became president of the organization in January of 95. And then during 1995 is when I heard about a burn camp that existed in Arizona. And it was in People magazine. And media sometimes makes it confusing for the public in the way they wrote the article. I thought there was a burn camp in every state. Mm-hmm. So on a Sunday morning, I said to Gary, we know some burn injured children. Why don't we get them to our camp? And he was a good husband. He said the two words, every man needs to know.
I always win every argument I've ever had with Linda. It's yes, dear, yes, and then it's all over.
And so I made a bunch of phone calls, and I found out there was no camp. So then on another Sunday morning, I said that to him, and I said, there is no camp. Could I start a camp? And he said,
yes, dear. And it was probably the hardest decision I've ever made in my life.
And we just completed our 18th year of Missouri Children's Burn Camp.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the camp before we get back to the other part of the organization, because I've seen videos and we've heard stories and we've known each other for a long time. I just can't impress upon people enough what kids would be going through who have suffered the kinds of injuries that you have, Gary, and then have to go to school or whatever.
Well, that's a big part of it. The children don't realize that, you know, we have support groups for adults, and not many children, small children especially, and even teenagers want to come together and talk about their injuries like an adult will in an open support group format. And the whole idea of burn camp is, yeah, take the kids to have a good time. But what they don't realize, it's a week-long support group. They're there with other commonality, children of the same burn injuries. They might be going to a school district that doesn't have a burn for the whole school district, much less their school. They've never been around and seen other burns. All of a sudden, they come together, and that commonality, the speech, it starts healing effect, and they don't even know it. They're just having a great time, but it has great effect later on.
And in relation to that is Gary's scars, because they're facial, are obvious, but you or I could have burns over the majority of our body, but because we refer to them as hidden scars because they're under our clothing. Now, what does happen for children at school is it's time for phys ed, so they have to change into their gym clothes. And now the other kids go, ooh, oh, and that child becomes ostracized. And over the years, I've heard children tell me heart-wrenching stories that they go into the bathroom to change clothes so that the other children can't see them. Or they would never wear gym shorts if their legs are scarred, and they only wear sweatpants to keep it covered. And those are the kinds of things that we hear all the time from our campers. So now to be at a camp that every single child has scars, I may have you more than you, and you may have more than the child next to you, but there's all scars. And when they go to the lake that first day and they go swimming or to the pool and they put on their swimming suits, it's a freedom that none of us can understand.
We should point out that it's a real camp. I mean, it's the kind of camp that so many youngsters go to at that age.
That is exactly what it is. It is a real camp. They go swimming. They go boating. They do archery. They do arts and crafts. The activities are what's normal. They're average activities. But it's who they're with that create a bond. And about a third of our staff are all volunteers, and about a third of them are adult burn survivors, which gives the kids a great opportunity to see, I'm going to grow up, and somebody's going to fall in love with me, even though I have scars.
It's a great, I mean, it's a great feeling, it has to be.
Now, but, after 18 years, we have even had some of the young people grow up. They have met at camp, and we have one couple that are now married and have two children that both of these, this mom and dad now, were campers over the years.
But, you know, one thing that occurs to me is the fact that when they leave the camp, they have to go back into the school or their own playground or what have you. How does the camp affect that part, their return to what would be called a normal day-to-day life?
It has a very important effect because while they're at camp, they have that opportunity of freedom. They have the opportunity to do things that maybe they haven't done. We have a high and low ropes course. And the purpose of the high ropes course isn't to climb a 40-foot wall. It's to challenge yourself, to push yourself. So the kids get to go home with an I can attitude. They've learned self-esteem, courage, self-value. And when they go home, I hear from parents every year, what did you do to my kid in 1 week? And who would think you could change a child in 1 week? But we can. I've had teachers call us and go, the difference from last year to this year is overwhelming. So that's what they're getting. They're going home with self-esteem. And then it's little things. 1 year, we have a dance. And camp for every child, part of it is the personal relationships you develop. And it might be a boyfriend, and it might be a girlfriend. And 1 year I had a 14, 15-year-old boy tell me he had never had a girlfriend. And the girl he met at camp, who was now his girlfriend in that week, it was the first girlfriend he ever had. Well, he had to go home with a new sense of value about who he is. It's just so important.
Well, what's the age range of the kids in the camp?
6 to 17, and I've been known to take some five-year-olds. I always say I make the rules, I get to break the rules. But some of the five-year-olds come from homes where they've stayed with this aunt and this grandma and that grandma. So going for a week-long sleepaway camp isn't traumatic to them. They're used to it, and they adapt very easily.
What are the criteria for attending the camp?
They have to have been hospitalized in the state of Missouri or be a current resident and have been in the hospital a minimum of 4 days. We don't want the kid who goes, I burned my finger, can I come?
Yeah.
No. Or have had a burn that affects their face, hands, or feet. And so what that allows us by that criteria is that the children who live in Missouri all qualify. But here in St. Louis, the children who live along the border of Illinois that are in Alton, in Belleville, in Carbondale, all up and down, they come here for their medical care. And they get to come to camp as well.
Just moving away from the kids for just a moment, we'll come back. Gary, it occurs to me that it's great for the kids to be exposed to other children that have the same kinds of injuries and get that kind of support. But as an adult, you don't have that. I mean, the psychological situation that you face, being out there kind of by yourself, aside from the support group, of course, but it's a little bit different, isn't it, for people like you?
It is a little bit, but you're right. The support group gives somewhat that path of other people and where they have gone. Even the burn survivors counselors that come to camp, I've seen some of them grow. We had one gentleman that he never wore shorts. He wanted to be a camp counselor. He had big burns on his legs. He showed up at camp. He had to wear a swimsuit like everybody else. And now he's a whole different person. And the camp has helped him out.
And, boy, that's so necessary, obviously.
I think so. It is very difficult to get back into society.
Who pays for all of this, Linda? I mean, obviously, it costs something to do these kinds of things.
We don't do anything that provides income through our services. Everything that we do is a gift to those that we're providing service to. So the income from our organization comes from public and corporate donations, private people who are kind enough to send us money. I write grants all year long. We get no federal funding, though, or state funding. And then, of course, fundraising events.
Fundraising events. Funny you should mention that, because I believe you have one coming up in the very near future. As a matter of fact, what, October 1st, right?
Next Wednesday, so it's less than a week away.
Tell us about that.
Well, we are very fortunate to have been able to partner with Neiman Marcus, and we are having an event next Wednesday night that is a fall 2014 fashion presentation. It will be a fashion show, a fashion presentation. And Neiman Marcus has been gracious to put all of this together for on our behalf. It'll be on the second floor. Admission is $50. You can pay at the door, or you can contact us beforehand to pay. There will be some of our campers will be there. And it's going to be a great event where you have entertainment by the Nikki Glenn Duo. There will be light bites provided by some of the wonderful restaurants of St. Louis. We will have Camptinis available.
Uh-huh. I think I get the message there. With olives?
I don't know. I'm not going to be making them.
All right, that's happening on Wednesday. We'll have full information about that on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Gary, back to you. One of the things you mentioned prior to our going on the air was your concerns about this time of year and safety. I mean, the best news of all is that people don't get burned. What are your concerns and what's your advice?
Well, we do have a safety program, and I would love to never have camp because no one had ever been burned anymore and we don't need it anymore, but that's not reality. There always will be accidents. But so many of us make poor choices, and especially this time of year, the fall weather comes, there's leaves, there's burning leaves, brush, and people will take gasoline and introduce it. And gasoline is an explosive, not just an accelerant. And over that period of time, people get themselves horribly burned when they think it's just burning some wet leaves. It's the wrong product. If you need to use something, use a charcoal lighter. Get something, a diesel fuel, even though diesel fuel nowadays is a little more volatile than it used to be. But something other than gasoline. Stay away from the gasoline.
People tend to be fairly blasé about this sort of thing, don't they? Just strike a match and throw it in a pile of something and watch her burn.
I see that. I'm in the hospital a couple times a week in the burn center talking to burn survivors, and I can't tell you that out of the 12-bed ICU unit, there is always one or two beds there that are from gasoline and brush or charcoal fires with gasoline. If it wasn't for gasoline, I know a couple burn surgeons that would be out looking for new jobs.
Right. Lynn, go ahead.
Well, and also at this time of the year, we're starting to light our fire pits in our backyards. People are going to campfires for various reasons. You're out camping and you're building a fire. And unfortunately, often, especially at a bonfire, at a school or college bonfire or just a get-together, people are often imbibing at the same time. And so now you've gotten a little tipsy and you're standing a little near the fire and maybe somebody bumps into you and you end up in the fire. And it's just amazing to us how often we see the same accident year after year after year. But then there's other things. There's kitchen safety, you know, how we work in our kitchens is very unsafe. There's always something to be able to talk about when it comes to prevention.
Something we all should be thinking about. Lynn and Gary Hansen, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Congratulations once again on the work you do. I hope you raise a ton of money next Wednesday, October 1st at Neiman Marcus, Missouri Children's Burn Camp fundraising event at Neiman Marcus on Wednesday from 5:30 to 7:30. It's a fall fashion presentation as well. So nice to see you guys again. And again, our congratulations for all that you do.
Thank you, Don.
Great. When we come back, St. Louis Public Radio's education reporter Dale Singer talks with Chris Nicastro, the retiring Missouri Commissioner of Education. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU.